Obviously, I'm not going to be as athletic as I once was before, but I feel like, you know, skill and IQ can go a long way, especially in the league. So I'm not too worried about it. Obviously, the game is going to have to change a little bit, but I still know how to play the game, and I think I can play at a high level.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Final hour coming at you here on this Tuesday evening. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was the voice of Bulls point guard Lonzo Ball. Tumultuous couple of seasons, specifically for his knees, more than anything else. And reportedly, he will be returning to the court tomorrow night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And the against is a word that I can only imagine how much Lonzo Ball has felt that as it relates to the cosmos, the medical industry, the cartilage and ligaments in his knees in particular. But beyond most, I suppose, reasonable medical experts, the expectations, he's going to get back on an NBA court. I don't know exactly what it means. I certainly don't know what to expect, but got a guy on the hotline who will be able to educate me on what's fair to anticipate as Lonzo Ball returns to the court. So let's head on out to the hotline. The Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. Where we find our guy Joe Cowley. He is on the X at J Cowley Hoops. Joe, what's happening this evening?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. As a guy who has had several knee surgeries and whose career came to an end limping around, where I just got tired of getting cut on over and over again, I can relate to the situation that Lonzo Ball finds himself in. It's a big question mark for me. I don't know what's fair or reasonable to expect with him stepping out there tomorrow night. Do you?
Well, no, nobody does. I mean, this is the first guy to come back from this. I believe there's been four professional athletes as of last count that have had this knee surgery. I think two were soccer players. One was a hockey player. The hockey player is still coming back, and I think both soccer players retired. So they were older than Lonzo. This is a Frankenstein experiment. So we'll all have to sit back and see. It's a complete knee replacement, cartilage replacement, however you want to phrase it. As he said, it's a whole new knee. So, it's going to be something to watch, definitely, because it's the last year of his contract. Obviously, he would like to extend his career. He's still very young. It probably won't be in Chicago. But I think they're doing everything they can and to help him along the way. But at the same time, also understand that there's a job to do and they have other guys they need to play. So it's going to be a fine line that they're going to have to walk in doing this. So, he's not going to play back-to-back games. He's going to be on a strict minutes restriction. What that looks like, I'm guessing early on, it's probably six minutes, and then, get him 12 to, 13 minutes somewhere in there the first game and then get him out. We're all kind of anxious to see what exactly he looks like. We got different reports. Kobe said he looks just like old Lonzo, and then Billy said yesterday that, you can tell that he's lost some things and we don't know if he'll get it back. So
from a contractual perspective, what position does this end up putting the Bulls in? I mean, to at least see what he's capable of is one thing, but, if they're going to try to get out from under the money that's still owed to him, is that a plausibility here?
Well, I mean, the best case scenario is he comes out and by November, early December, he looks like old Lonzo in the minutes they give him. Now, what those minutes look like, whether it's 15 to 20 a night or 22 a night, but he showcases something because now you have an expiring contract you could possibly move to help a team that needs a backup point guard that has that skill set, positional size, ability to rebound and then push the ball up the floor, ability to turn a four-on-four into a four-on-three just because of his up-temponess and the way he sees the floor. So if they can get that somewhat 80, 90% of old Lonzo back, then it does benefit them because now it's a trade piece. It's another piece that they can try and move. So, I think they're going to do everything they can for themselves and what's right for Lonzo and do right by him. So, if he's playing well, it's a win-win for both, because now all of a sudden you have another piece on the chessboard you could try moving.
So Lonzo Ball isn't just viewing this as a feel-good story where he wants to give it the old college try.
No, not at all. He thinks since day one of this surgery, when they explained him exactly what he's up against, he thought, why can't I be the first one to do it? So that has been his mentality. He's taken a very workmanlike approach, not trying to rush back too soon, but also not taking the D. Rose mentality where you have to fill 100% every day before you go out there and the brand is bigger than anything else. So, I think that they feel good about his approach to this and the way he's communicated with not only his medical staff, but with the Bulls medical staff. So they've all kind of been in line with that. So, we'll see what it looks like. I think that's kind of what we've all been waiting for this training camp is, we were told he was going to play, and he said last week he was going to play. And obviously I think the COVID messed up some things, set him back a week. Otherwise we would have seen him already. But tomorrow night's huge, whether it is 12 minutes or 13 minutes, what he looks like and how close he is to old Lonzo. And then obviously what he feels like the next day. I mean, you brought up your knee stuff. Getting through the game is one thing. How you feel when you're trying to get out of bed the next day, that's a whole different animal.
It's the additional data point. Now, not only the day of, but the day after. There's no doubt about that, man. The way that this season, how should we view, what context should we be viewing this season through? For me, it does have a bit of a shade of like the D-Wade, Rajon Rondo year. It's like, are we getting young? Not quite. Let's bring some old heads in here. Let's combine some youth with some age, and we're going to be a little better than we probably should be in a season like this and not have much production out of it. That's what last season was. How different is the way, the context we should view this season with its current construction versus what happened last year?
Well, I don't think it's how you view it. It's what they're able to accomplish. If Zach LaVine or Zach LaVine or Vooch are off the roster come February, then you should look at this season as a success. Forget wins and losses. This is about capture the flag and Cooper flag. This is about doing whatever you can to make sure that top 10 protected pick stays your way and doesn't go San Antonio's way. Your chance, even if they have the worst record in the NBA or one of the worst records, they're at 14.9% to get that number one pick. So, but you know what? To win the lottery, you got to buy a lottery ticket. And I'll take my chance. I mean, the reports, I was able to talk to some people this summer when I went to Vegas, and one of the things they talked about is, you saw highlights of what Cooper Flagg was doing to Team USA when he was on that select team, kind of competing against them and getting them ready for the Olympics. Yeah. But the highlights that weren't shown and the fearlessness he plays with and the dominance he brought on that select team, and he was not afraid of anyone, whether it was, AD or whoever it was, he went at everybody. So to me, he is an organizational seismic changer, and you have to do whatever you can to have a lottery ticket and be holding that lottery ticket when they do that draw. So I don't care what it takes. You want to move pieces and you want to be as bad as you can be. And, you can't come out and admit that. But I think in doing what they've done, trying to do this kind of half youth movement with still veterans that you're trying to move, I think the writing's on the wall that they're not looking to be a playoff team this year, no matter what they say. If they're in a play-in game at the end of the year, they should all just be fired. They should hand in their resignation because they did everything wrong that you could do as an organization.
So how do they make that happen while having the desire for Zach LaVine to play like a desirable trade piece and Nikola Vucevic to play like a desirable trade piece? How do those things balance out?
Well, they did it when they traded DeMar DeRozan, one of the elite closers in the NBA and a guy that saved their ass for, three-plus seasons. And then they did it when they traded Alex Caruso, a first-team all-defender. So you did it under the disguise of, we're going young. Because, I mean, look, there's nights where this is going to look like a layup line for the opposing team. I mean, there's not anyone on the roster that admittedly said, yeah, we're going to be great defensively. They're all talking the same way, that we have to figure out how we're going to play defense. They're going to be a horrible defensive team. What you don't want is nights where Zach, because he could put 40 on anybody, is playing hero ball and sneaks you out three wins that you really don't want. That's what you don't want. You want Zach showcasing his talent, but at the same time, you want Kobe continue to excel towards all-star level. You want Matis Bucelis doing what he's done since summer league, which is just playing fearless with an attitude, with a swagger. I mean, that's what you want. You know, you don't want wins. You want development, and you want the guys that you want to move showcasing their abilities in October, November, December, so they do become movable pieces. That's the ideal goal for this roster.
What I haven't been able to get my mind wrapped around, I know I've asked you some version of this before, but I probably asked it more so through the context of Zach and DeMar being able to work together. But now that we do have this enhanced version of Kobe White, I haven't completely wrapped my mind around why did it take Zach being gone, being out of the way, for Kobe to sort of have the full agency that we saw him be able to grab last season?
Why did it take Zach to be gone to Lauri Markkanen to have his best month as a Bull? Because there was no Zach. Why do we seem to see other young guys excel when Zach's not on the floor? I mean, this isn't just an isolated case. I mean, Zach needs his shots. Zach wants his shots. And there's times where it seems like Zach doesn't have a full understanding, especially late in games, and what's a good shot. Because he's such a bad shot maker, that almost makes you dangerous late in games, because you don't know what's a bad shot at that point, because you can fall out of bed and make anything. So to me, that's always been his problem. And I think the first year with DeMar, he understood that, you know, DeMar is DeMar, and he understood the Robin role and knew who Batman was. Once he got that contract extension, you know, then it was different. Then you saw him starting to sulk late in games when they didn't call his number. And I remember one time DeMar, it was like back-to-back games, DeMar attempted game winners. It didn't happen. And Zach went off about just how stagnant and predictable they are in the final minute of a game. Well, message sent. You're saying, let me shoot it. So, and to DeMar's credit, I think he did try passing that torch to Zach, but Zach either missed the shot or had a turnover, or, I mean, so he gave him chances. Kobe's different. Kobe's mindset is, you know, the front of the jersey is the most important thing. So he doesn't get caught up in the ego thing of, oh, I'm Batman, you're Robin, or this or that. He just goes out and wants, you know, the front of the jersey to shine. So I think that's what is unique about him. Now, he does have a voice, and a voice that's getting louder and louder, and one that's not afraid to get in anybody's face. I mean, I think we started seeing that early last year when he kind of, I think it was the first or second game, he pushed Zach out of the way because he wanted to defend the guy that Billy had put Zach on, and he thought he would do a better job. So, I just think that, you know, Zach doesn't necessarily always play well with others. He almost needs to be on a team where there's defined superstars, so he knows his role. And, you know, if it's the right team, he's the third guy. If he's the third guy and it's a known, you're the known third guy, then that's probably a championship level team.
So this version of Kobe White, who now has had that opportunity to be the dude, like Zach goes and has his surgery, DeMar defers. And so Kobe had almost, you know, the majority of last season to be the best version of himself. And he was that. He was borderline all-star. So what does that equate to for this year with Zach back?
Well, I think he could, you know, just because of the offense they lost with Alex, and, you know, especially the three-point shooting with Alex. I mean, he turned into a really good three-point shooter, especially from the corner. And then also, obviously, with the shots DeMar took. So, I mean, there's plenty of shots for Kobe. What's going to be interesting is does he feel comfortable enough going back off the ball now that Josh Giddey's there? Because Josh is the primary playmaker. Zach's a catch and shoot, and he's at his best at catch and shoot, so it really won't affect his game. He likes to have the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter, but like I said, that doesn't always work out well. Kobe, you know, finally got the point guard job back last year and had the ball in his hands a lot more and excelled. The nice thing is they did play a lot off of DeMar, so it's not like he needs the ball in his hands. So it's going to be interesting to see how he Fields going back to the primary two guard or primary off guard. But to me, the jump he now has to take is on the defensive end, and he knows that. And I will say this, he is a Jimmy Butler-like worker as far as he fixes his own stuff. He works on his own stuff. He doesn't need to be told by the coaching staff, hey, you need to work on this and work on this. I think that's the thing about Kobe that none of us really saw, is just the tireless worker he was. And that's why I think he made the big jump, just because he just – you have to pull him out of the gym. And so the defensive end has to – somebody's got to step up on the defensive end, and they've all talked about it. But I think the one that possibly could, just because he's kind of got that mentality, is Kobe. So, but he's got to take a big jump. If he can take a big jump on that side of the ball, now all of a sudden the Bulls have someone special, because now you have an all-star caliber guy.
Joe Cowley roams the Bulls beat for the Chicago Sun-Times. You can find him on Twitter at @JCowleyHoops. But we know Jay Cowley doesn't always just like to stick to talking hoops. He's very passionate about a wide variety of sports. Saw you kind of getting after it with a few folks talking some football on social earlier, Joe. Was this? Are you lashing out because Justin Fields is apparently going to get benched by the Steelers? Or what's happening with your squad?
No, I mean, look, the whole time it's been – you got to give Russ a look. And I think they're both going to play. I mean, they're going to have packages for Fields. And yeah. I mean, they're both going to play. But I'm anxious to see what it'll look like with Russ, especially some of the slow starts the last three games. I don't like slow starts. I've seen enough of those the last couple of years. So now, do I think that Fields has gotten the Bears' ook off of him? Because trust me, that's a hard ook to get off of you. I definitely think you do. I mean, Arthur Smith, I mean, he made Tannehill look like a pro bowler. So, I mean, you know, there's something to be said about what he does with the quarterback and kind of covering up a guy's weaknesses. So, yeah, but, you know, I'm anxious to see what Russ looks like. And the nice thing is you're not married to either one of these guys. I mean, you know, you're not paying anybody in that quarterback room. So see what you got and take it from there.
Are you sold on Caleb Williams?
It's funny because it's fun. Well, I was here. Here's the thing that's hilarious. If you go back on the Twitter timeline, 2 years ago, I was tweeting out that the only way Fields' career could be saved is if he gets out of the Bears because they're ruining the kid. I mean, I watched every game he played at Ohio State. And so they were ruining the kid. And then you're an ass for saying that. But I'm trying to tell Bears fans, they're ruining him. They're turning him into a QB2. He's a backup quarterback. No, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay. So then I was saying, don't worry. If everything goes right, you will get the baby Jesus, Caleb Williams. But now my fear is because I don't like Eberflus as the head coach.
Okay.
If you read some of the stuff from Seattle about Waldron, when you're head coach is on the hot seat and has a say in the offensive coordinator, he's going to pick someone who is a weak prince because he doesn't want to be overthrown. And I think that's what happened. I was surprised they let that happen. I thought polls would say, I'm picking the offensive coordinator and it's going to be a guy that I feel, if you continue to mismanage games, can take over the head coach job. So what my fear is for Caleb Williams, in 2 years, they have to fire the entire coaching staff. And now you're starting off at ground zero again. So, which would be so Bears, as you know.
Well, you just sent a shiver down the spines of a lot of Bears fans who were just trying to enjoy their bye week, Joe, but I couldn't help but ask you about a little football before we let you run on this fine evening. Appreciate you taking the time and look forward to reading everything you have to write and tweet about the return of Lonzo Ball tomorrow night.
Sounds good, my man. Anytime.
All right, that is Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times beat reporter for covering the Chicago Bulls. Big return tomorrow night for Lonzo Ball. I'm really hopeful about it. That's probably the best word I could use for the way I feel about Lonzo Ball stepping back onto a basketball court. I mean, the various procedures I had on my knees, I had a reconstruction, I had chondromalacia where they shaved down these dents under my kneecap, had microfracture where they drill these holes into the cartilage in the knee to get some enhanced blood flow in there in the hopes that it'll essentially serve as some additional buffer in the joint that, you know, where I just didn't have any cartilage left essentially in my left knee. And, you know, I had a bunch of different stuff done. My popliteus tendon was torn, had to repair that also. So I had a lot of stuff done to my knees, and I still feel the effects of it constantly today. Now, the fact that I can formulate a complete sentence on a regular basis, then folks can tell, like, yeah, your eggs aren't too scrambled, and you can walk in a straight line. So there's, you know, like the assumption that, like, hey, you got out of the sport, you're doing good, feeling good. Like, my knees, my back, my shoulders would tell a different story. So Lonzo Ball is 26 years old. I was 28 and basically just got tired of my wife having to push me around in wheelchairs after surgery, after surgery, after surgery. So at 28, I said, all right. I'm limping around again. This is enough. Been getting cut on enough, so I called it quits. But I understand exactly where he's at with this thing, with going through the procedures he's gone through and just wanting to see, wanting to know with certainty whether or not this is possible. Plausible? No. Is it possible? Yes. And he's been testing himself for the last 2 years and going through every procedure necessary to put himself in a position to return to the court, and then from there work his tail off and just see what's possible, see what can happen, see what the results themselves are. I'm looking forward to watching. I'm rooting for him, not just because he's with the Bears, but or with the Bulls, but just because he's an athlete who's going through a bunch of procedures, going through difficulties with his body as he's been at the top of the food chain as a pro athlete. Now, as a very young man, that mortality of his career has been upon him for a while. So this is an opportunity for him to just test himself, test his body, and see whether or not there's a world where he can continue as a pro athlete. So I'm very much rooting for Lonzo Ball. I'm going to be watching that closely. I want to get back into some football conversation. Here's some football sound as well. We started letting you hear a bit from Matt Eberflus a bit earlier in the show, and Tyler Butterball has alerted me to some new Jalen Johnson sound that's out there as well. We know Jalen Johnson doesn't mind making the media rounds. And last time he was on with Kay Adams on Up and Adams, he had something that that made the media rounds quite a bit when he was talking about the upcoming Bears quarterback that was entering the fray in Caleb Williams. Now, apparently Jalen Johnson's had a couple extra things to say to Kay Adams on Up and Adams. We'll play that for you next on The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I don't know how many of you have spent much time watching Cooper Flag highlights as of yet. But certainly had read some of the reports about the way he had performed against the U.S. men's basketball team in preparation for the Olympics, and just seeing that guy 17, 18 years old. And, you know, he's viewed as one of these guys who is a franchise-altering sort of talent, getting ready to play at Duke. It was just announced, actually, earlier today. He was picked as the ACC, they call it Rookie of the Year, Freshman of the Year, whichever term you want to use. But uber talented guy out of Maine, but who knows? You know, who knows what he turns into in the NBA. But that being said, the Bulls having an opportunity to draft Cooper Flag, to maybe get that number one overall pick, at least have a shot at that lottery ticket, to the point that Joe Cali was making there. You understand why it would behoove the franchise to be in position for that. The issue can end up being, like, you know, how do you? You certainly don't expect Billy Donovan to coach poorly on purpose. You don't expect Kobe White to miss shots on purpose, or Patrick Williams, all the development that folks have been really hopeful about there. You know, you don't expect his game to not continue maturing on purpose just so the Bulls have a chance to maybe get a lottery pick, maybe get the first overall pick so they can go get Cooper Flag. Josh Giddey's in a contract year. Josh Giddey's going to set up as many open teammates as possible with assists. He's going to lead the break and jack three-pointers as frequently as possible, hoping to put up some good numbers and get paid by the Bulls or by somebody else. And then you do have the aspect of Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic, and whether or not they can perform at a level where they're going to be viewed as quality trade commodities to get with a winning franchise, an organization that's looking to do something this season. So the Bulls at their best are not likely to be a playoff team. But that being said, if they're again a play-in team in this version that we saw last season of Coby White, the best version of Zach LaVine, assuming he's that again after knee surgery. Vooch still has good hoops in him. Josh Giddey is a quality point guard with court vision. Iwadosumu, good six man. I mean, I don't know. Could this version of the Bulls be a play-in team again? Certainly plausible. And I don't know. The Bulls are not all out yet. They haven't gotten themselves to the all-out position right now. And that's a it's not enough. If they're going to go there, they need to figure out a way to go there. What makes sense, though, is to not take a half measure, but at whatever point they unload Zach LaVine, it will be better off to find a way and a time to unload Zach LaVine when his value is higher than it apparently is at the moment. So they're exercising patience. I get that. I respect that. I view myself as a patient person as well. But the current construct of this roster, I'm not confident it's bad enough to be who apparently the Bulls, at least the Bulls brass, wants to be. But I think everybody's in on the bit. I think everybody who's there knows what they're supposed to be trying to achieve here. Just how do you go about those dual paths where you got individual players, individual talent that will benefit from performing at a high level? Well, as a franchise, as an organization, they will benefit from being bad. I don't know. Feels like a similar space to where the Bulls have been for a few seasons at this point. I don't know if Cooper Flagg is much of a trash talker. Frankly, I wasn't completely aware that Trevor Lawrence was much of a trash talker. Yeah. Watched most of the college games he played, covered him since he came out of high school in the All-American Bowl. Got to chase him around the field a few times in San Antonio when all that was going on, the event I call every year for NBC. But apparently he is. At least that's what Jalen Johnson was talking to Kay Adams about when he was on her show, Up and Adams. Here was one of the top corners in football, maybe the top corner in football. He was on with Kay Adams earlier today, just kind of describing the experience in London and what the opposing quarterback from Jacksonville, what he had to say to the Bears.
And it's funny because earlier in the game, Trevor had said something. I got a holding call or somebody was holding me. And I told him, we were just talking trash, and he was like, you're not even that good in the pass. I'm like, okay, like, throw it. Like, you talking a little too crazy. So when I seen he threw it, I was like, nah, I got to make a play on this one because I'll be damned if he talks about my pass coverage and he gets a touchdown on me. So just honestly just making plays, just going out there, having fun, doing what I do best.
I'm sorry, Trevor was talking?
Yeah, because, I mean, again, like, I got a holding call. The tight end was holding. I got a holding call. So I was really talking to the tight end, and he was like, you play the run better than you play the pass. Like, you're not even like that in the past. I'm just like, if anything, it's the other way around. Like, people don't know me too much for just being dominant in the run game. So when he said that, I was just like, okay, throw me the ball then. Let's see about it.
Jalen, I literally cannot picture Trevor Lawrence talking. I cannot picture it.
Yeah, and it's crazy because it was like either the play before or two plays before he ended up throwing a damn touchdown to Gabe Davis on like yeah. I think it was like a scramble drill. It was like two plays before that. I don't know if you if you remember or the people remember, but we were talking a little bit and then he ended up throwing a touchdown. I'm like, good thing. Not good thing it wasn't on me, but I'm like, that would have sucked if he would have came back and threw a touchdown on me the next play. So, but I ended up getting him.
Trevor Lawrence is, between the previous game before it showed up in London and then at least what he showed against the Bears in London, he's starting to play better football the last couple of games here. And he was not aided at all by some of his teammates, Gabe Davis, dropping the ball every which way, tight end position, Evan Engram, not making much happen either. Now, Engram had 10 receptions, 10 targets, but then he's putting the ball on the ground, getting it punched out, fumbling it away. But Trevor Lawrence talking trash. As a youngster, as a teenager, last time I was spending any significant time around him in person, he wasn't giving off the trash-talking vibe back then. But, I don't put it past anybody when you're out there competing at a high level. I'm confident Jalen Johnson doesn't mind talking a little smack on his own end of things either. So it is, it's funny, it's interesting, it's intriguing to hear Trevor Lawrence apparently talking a little bit on his end as well. And I think it's obvious that he wasn't really trying to talk any serious smack, because in the end, what he said was, as Jalen Johnson pointed out to Kay Adams, kind of the inverse of the way that that JJ is kind of viewed in the sport. I think he's a little bit underappreciated for how physical he is as a tackler. Like early in his career when he was still having the shoulder issues and everything, that was one thing. But, you know, he's not out here missing a whole lot of tackles. He's willing to come up, set the edge, be that force contained guy on, you know, in the run game and on screen passes and everything else. It gets you on the ground. But that is funny to hear that Trevor Lawrence was operating in that space, talking a little bit of trash to Jalen Johnson. We were talking about Matt Eberflus a bit earlier in the show. Let you hear a bit from Flus about his thoughts after they returned from London and where the Bears were at as a team. Let's hear a little bit more from the Bears head coach, though. And specifically, as he was talking about his quarterback, Caleb Williams, one of the things that was asked of him was about some of the improvements that Caleb's made. And this one is specifically about Caleb versus the blitz.
How much has he improved in terms of IDing the blitzes pre-snap and then finding the answers to it in the play?
Yeah, he's done a really good job with that. You know, every defense provides different things, and there's going to be unscouted looks every single week. You know, so what you see on tape is not necessarily what you're going to see in the game. And that's part of being in the NFL and part of game planning and be able to tactically adjust offensively and as a quarterback in game. So it's important that we continue to do that. Recognize what's going on in front of us and have the plans to be able to succeed going forward.
And it's one thing for that plan to be devised on the grease board. It's another thing when you're actually out there and you got the coach calling the play in your ear and you're communicating that play in the huddle and the play clock is ticking down. You got defenders moving every which way. You're trying to motion your teammates around and get everybody lined up correctly and the crowd's yelling at you and all these other things are going through your head. And you have to try and execute that. You have to try and decipher what the opponent is throwing at you, and in some scenarios, under immense duress. Now, there was not immense duress being faced, whether that be physical duress from a pass rush that was getting home or mental duress from a defense that was going to be adept at confusing him. Neither one of those types of duress or types of pressure was really on Caleb as much in the game on Sunday over in London facing Jacksonville is what it had been against some of the opponents early in the season, and certainly what it will be when facing some of the opponents that remain on the Bears' schedule. It wasn't a complex defensive scheme mentally, and it wasn't a pass rush. They was able to pressure him very much physically. And so now we're seeing multiple games back-to-back of Caleb looking comfortable. Chicken or egg? Does he look so comfortable because the opponents have now begun to diminish a little bit in their abilities? Does he look so comfortable because the offensive game plan has improved? Does he look so comfortable because there's just more time on task and he's just got more reps and figuring out this NFL thing? The answer is yes. It's all of it. It all combines into this gumbo of Caleb and his development as a quarterback. And the development gumbo will continue to have, you know, certain bites that have a little bit more spice to them than others. But in the end, I think we're on the way to being a pretty tasty recipe when we're looking at the development of the young quarterback. Now, the offensive line for the Bears, at the moment, they've been in a position where they've performed much better here in recent games. But they'll have tougher opponents. They have different matchups. And hopefully, using the bye week, some of that depth will enhance for the O-line as they've been a little bit banged up. But the unit that's on the field right now has performed well in concert with the way that Shane Waldron has begun calling the Bears' offense. It's one thing Matt Eberflus talked about as well. The way he's been encouraged by what he's seen from the plan in place with the Bears' offensive line.
No, I've been encouraged with the guys that have been in there. And again, it's always going to be, you know, it's a long season. It's always going to be, hey, we're going to have slides of different guys in there during the course, you know, of this season. But I do like where it's been the last few weeks. It's been firm. It's been good. And, you know, the protection's been nice, you know, in terms of that. The continuity's been good, too. So, you know, we'll see where it is when guys come back, you know, and where guys are going forward. We'll always put the best five we have out there with, for that particular week. But yeah, I've been pleased with it for sure.
Well, there's a lot to be pleased about. There's no doubt there with the results you're seeing on the field. Take my final time out. There's a little news being made. Something's been getting aggregated here from one of the most prominent owners in professional sports. And got to pay some respect to Jerry Jones because he didn't mind being out there in the media. But it doesn't always go so well for him. We'll play that for you on the other side of this timeout. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let me tell you what I'll do. Let me tell you what I'll do about it. I will let us sit down and look at the decisions we've made over the last several years. Okay? I'll look at it. Now, if you think I'm interested in a damn phone call with you over a radio and sitting here and throwing all the good out with the dishwater, you have got to be smoking something over there this morning. I'm not. And I really don't, and I don't even want our listeners to listen to me, to talk about this is not your job. Your job isn't to let me go over all the reasons that I did something, and I'm sorry that I did it. That's not your job.
Jerry Jones, Cowboys owner, that's the voice that you heard there with that twang that he tends to deliver. He makes a weekly appearance on 103 The Fan in Dallas, his weekly radio spot that he has there. And, you know, same hosts that constantly have Jerry Jones on, and sometimes they spat back and forth a bit, apparently, after things aren't going well with the Cowboys. Cowboys have been embarrassed at home a few times so far this season. Got to the point later on in that segment where Jerry Jones apparently threatened to fire the radio hosts, you know, after he was letting them know, like, nah, this ain't your job. And you know, basically told them that we may have to do something a little different.
You have got to be smoking something over there this morning.
And, yeah, beyond what they were or were not smoking, he let them know that their job may or may not continue at that station. So, you want to hear from Bears brass on a little more frequent basis? I don't know. Not sure that's always a good thing. Have the folks who run the team, folks who own the team out there in the media as much as Jerry Jones is. You get a bunch of rich and powerful people who are used to just being able to tell folks what to do and when to do it. And always like their power being challenged by those who work under them or who they see is working under them. Who knows? But not Jerry Jones' best moment. Certainly not his worst moment either. You've seen some of the moments Jerry's been a part of here. But I don't think it's his best either. It's been a fun evening. No doubt about that. Appreciate all the guests who joined me on the show tonight. Thanks to Brett Coleman, Herb Howard, and Joe Cowley. Of course, thanks to my guy Tyler Butabaugh as well. Running things for me on the other side of the glass throughout the evening here. Appreciations and salutations to all of you for listening in. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.